This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/TNW.
Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tech News Weekly. I'm John Bubb, and here with me today is John Prosser.
John Prosser. And
hi. Hi, myself. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So if you guys notice, the show's a little bit different today.
Not only because
we have John Prosser on here, but we're Andrew-less.
That's not really that much different. I'm on quite a bit now.
Yeah. But probably the fact that there's no Andrew...
Yeah, that's different. Has he ever missed one of his own shows ever?
You know, I don't think so.
So this is the first.
Yeah, this is the first. It'll be interesting to see how this show goes without
Hashtag
Andrew.
Thanks, Taylor.
Yeah, so Andrew is busy dealing with a sick baby today, so it's just me and John. It's the two John shows.
Tech news. John's
tech news. John's. Oh, is that like going to a bathroom to get news?
Yeah, that's it.
Tech news. Tech news in the toilet. This is great. So if you're on the toilet, right, you can get tech news. Well, before we go into news, we should talk about our sponsor, and that's Braintree. Braintree.com. It's a PayPal company. What's that?
I said talk about them.
Yeah. So Braintree is a really cool company. If you're looking to make mobile payments, let me bring up the copy here so I actually have that in front of me since I haven't done this ad before. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types on mobile with a simple integration. It supports all types of payments for your customers that you might want, such as Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, and all major credit and debit cards. It's super easy to use. It's secure and simple. All you do is, if you're a developer, it's so easy. You don't have to spend time creating this entire e-commerce system. All you do with a few lines of code, you can use the Braintree API and integrate it into your mobile application. It's super easy. We've had friends of the GFQ network that have used this thing and were surprised at just how easy this thing is to use. Braintree is awesome. They have best-in-class customer service. So if you have any questions or a problem with Braintree, you can always get to a live person to talk to. There's no phones, no bots, no generated email replies. It's all real interactions with real human beings. It's one of the most secure ways to pay. It's supported. You can actually see this in use by big companies such as Airbnb, Uber, Hotel Tonight, and Living Social. It's a really cool way to get mobile payments up and running in your application in literally just a few minutes. Check them out on the web, and you can get your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free by going to braintreepayments.com/TNW. We want to thank Braintree for their support of Tech News Weekly.
That is a lot of money fee-free. $50,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, you got some big companies using this thing too, Uber and Hotel Tonight and Airbnb. I mean, so you know, yep. It's got to be great.
I wish we could use it. Too bad we spent, like, talk about spending a ton of time implementing something else. We use Stripe, and that took forever to implement on our website. So I wish I would have known about this then.
Yeah, well, maybe when you redo your site, you can take a look at this.
When I redo my site.
Am I giving you too much credit?
I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine.
So let's go on to our first news story of the day. WhatsApp is pulling their application from BlackBerry. WhatsApp is a popular application that has been around for several years now, and it came out today that they decided that they're no longer going to support BlackBerry.
Hmm. Well, are you shocked?
No, I'm not. But I think what's surprising here is that BlackBerry was one of the first platforms that WhatsApp launched on. Because WhatsApp has been around for like since like 2008, I think. Because I remember interviewing Jan Koum, one of the founders and CEO, back in like 2009. So they've been around for a while. And I think that's the shocking part is that even though BlackBerry is still somewhat bigger in Europe than it is here in North America, it's the fact that they're now seeing the part that they no longer can support BlackBerry.
Right. I mean, you said this WhatsApp launched in like 2008?
I think it was 2008. It might have been a year or two earlier. I know they've been around for a long time, though.
I guess that makes sense because back then BlackBerry was like ruling everything in terms of your quote-unquote smartphones. But obviously today's a bit different. It's the same. Is it the same staff after Facebook acquired them?
I'm not sure.
I'm wondering if it has to do with the like new management or if it's the same staff and they decided they couldn't support it.
In the article, they say that BlackBerry has gotten to the point where the things that they want to do with WhatsApp now to enhance its features isn't possible on the BlackBerry platform among some other platforms.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by this. Of course I'm not shocked by this. I'm not the biggest BlackBerry supporter, but even BlackBerry isn't supporting BlackBerry anymore. They're moving towards Android, which is good. I've said this every time this story comes up in terms of BlackBerry and Android. This is what they should have done years ago. It's cool to see them doing it now. And if BlackBerry is not going to support BlackBerry, why would we expect other applications to support BlackBerry like WhatsApp when they're it's a massive app and a massive ecosystem and they're doing just fine on Android and iOS.
Well, that's my feeling too. Is that at this point BlackBerry is still so far behind that it's almost like they have the same problem that Windows Phone has in the sense that. They just kind of lagged behind in terms of supporting their devices that nobody is really interested in creating applications for these devices anymore. And the two kind of go hand in hand. If you don't have the app ecosystem, people aren't going to come to the device. If you don't have the device that people want, nobody's going to build an application for that device.
Yeah. It's, I'm not shocked. It's kind of sad, especially
if
WhatsApp, launched with them, but it's 2016 now. It's not 2008, 2009.
Yeah, because WhatsApp was one of the first applications, or BlackBerry was one of the first applications with WhatsApp.
Wait, what?
It's hard to switch all these things when I'm trying to pay attention to notes. I want to talk about this YouTube article in here. YouTube is reducing the chances of mistaken video takedowns. This is something that's been kind of an issue for a while now where a lot of creators have been complaining about their videos being taken down. Namely, this past week, there's been a rash of takedowns for Call of Duty clips. And so now in response, YouTube says that they've created a new team that's focused on, quote unquote, minimizing mistakes that take down videos without a legitimate cause.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this? Is this good news, bad news?
I mean, we don't really know how well this quote-unquote team of people is going to perform in helping the issues that we've been seeing lately, but it's good news. It just really sucks that it took so long. Because we've been talking about this for years. This has been an issue with YouTube for years in terms of content ID. I've said this before. The reason that there's such a big problem with content ID is because it's so automatic. And right. YouTube never really cared about fighting anyone's battles. YouTube has to protect
YouTube. Well, their system
YouTube,
was perfect.
Right. YouTube never really needed to worry about other people because YouTube just needed to protect YouTube. I mean, before content ID and copyright strikes were even a thing, it was fine. Everyone you would go on YouTube and find like TV shows reuploaded and movies reuploaded. And then
find that stuff today.
There are ways to get around it, but now that people are making money off of stuff, ever since people started monetizing things, that's when companies started being like, "Well, this isn't fair," and they would sue YouTube. So YouTube had to create something where they could protect themselves and still be able to monetize content for other users. And implementing something like Content ID was their way of doing that. But there are hours and hours and hours and hours of video uploaded every minute to YouTube. So there can't be like necessarily people going and looking at every single thing that's uploaded to validate it to make sure that it's copyright free. So they had to implement an automatic system, which essentially will take whatever's uploaded and automatically throw it through a catalog of other stuff and see if there's any matches. Now, that works to an extent. The other problem that we're having is that companies or people are now claiming that somebody else's work was stolen from them or re-uploaded, or they used a piece of their content that shouldn't have been used, and then they manually flag the content. And from there, YouTube just wants to protect itself. It does not care to investigate it. It's just like, okay, like there's no risk. If you flag it, we're just going to take it down. So there's a couple ways that they can do that. YouTube can remove the monetization on the video. They can restriction lock it. They can give them the money that the video is making to the person that claimed it, or they can terminate the video entirely. And that's what we were seeing. And like this goes down to really specific stuff, John, like Call of Duty stuff. The game, I'm sure gameplay and stuff can be taken down just because of the gameplay and whatever. And that's a whole other argument. But a big problem that people were having was it wasn't even the game developers that are flagging this stuff. It's people that make sound clips. Like to make the sound effects for the games. Because
we've had that problem before.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that. So YouTube now says that they're going to work on it because we've had a bunch of stuff happen. And really, smaller YouTubers are the biggest targets here. And when the video gets taken down, they don't have much of a voice, you know. No one's going to be able to know about this one dude in Oklahoma with 100 subscribers that got his video terminated. No one's going to find out about that. And that's what we've been seeing.
And I think that's part of the problem is that and while they are promising more transparency when they take down videos and remove the monetization, it comes down to the fact that it seems like there was no way to get a hold of somebody at YouTube to really appeal this. Yes, they have this really lame appeal system that when they take down a video, you're allowed to repeal it. But the appeal system was really, really, really lame. Like you really couldn't do anything with the appeal.
I just had to do that. So the thing with YouTube is when there's a claim issued, you have the right to dispute it. And right off the bat, when something is claimed or whatever, you get an email from YouTube and it says, you know, this person or this company claimed this video for this reason. And then they timestamp what they believe the copyrighted material was in the video. And they give you an option. They say you can delete the video. You can remove the audio from the video. Or you can dispute the claim. And if you choose to dispute the claim, you have to approve that process about 5 times. Because they flat out tell you, like, there's a risk. There is a risk. If you lose the dispute, there is a chance that YouTube will terminate your entire channel. And I just had to do this. I had no idea this happened, but I wanted to go ahead and download our 300th episode of my show so I could use clips from it. And when I went to do it, I didn't have the option to download it. And I was like, what the heck? And I looked, and there was a copyright claim on it. And I was like never notified. This is over a year ago. I don't remember ever being notified about it. And then it was the claim was by my network, which at the time was full screen. And they said the music that you used here is claimed. I was with the network at the time, so I had the license to use it. So I disputed it. And I literally just yesterday had to go through this 5-step process to explain myself and prove that I have the license. And are you sure you want to dispute this? Because you might not win. If you don't win, bad things happen, John. And it's a really difficult thing, especially when the system is completely automated. And who knows when a real person is ever going to look at that dispute that I made. So I'm glad that we're going to see, hopefully, some real people that understand the law in terms of fair use and copyright and stuff. Hopefully, when someone disputes a claim, YouTube is right on it and can handle it. For example, if I did something in a tech news show and the video got taken down, and I had to dispute it, and YouTube eventually got it back up, it doesn't hold much value for me to get that video up a week or two later. The news is already gone. So I'm curious to see how well this goes. It's really sad, though, that it took some major, major YouTubers to make videos to get to YouTube, like for anyone to hear them.
I think this is a step in the right direction, and we'll have to wait and see just what kind of steps, how well this actually goes for creators, because I'm still unsure as to whether or not this is really going to solve problems, because I think a lot of times, yes, there's so much content that YouTube has that there's no, anybody can agree there's so much content being uploaded to YouTube that YouTube does not have the time to go and look at every single video that's uploaded. But I think there's also a fair amount of fair use claims that get taken down, and the process for creators to dispute that is almost too great to overcome that most creators don't do with that. Or if they do it, it just takes so much time that it's not worth doing.
And when you see that big warning that says, hey, if you dispute this, we might terminate your channel if you're wrong, then I'm sure a lot of the smaller guys or people that are making a living off of YouTube, that's too big of a risk for them.
Mm-hmm. I really hope that this is something that it can expand on in the future if it is successful.
Yeah.
So let's move on to another story. I don't know if you saw, but the long-awaited Ghostbusters reboot trailer debuted this week. It's a group of all females this time. Instead of all four dudes as Ghostbusters, you have stars such as Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones as the Ghostbusters this time around. And I believe it's directed by Paul Feig, and it's debuting on July 15th. I don't know if you've watched this yet. I've watched this, and
watched a little bit of it before we started.
And I've got a lot of friends that are big into Ghostbusters, and I've watched this now a couple times. First time I watched the first time I watched the trailer, I'm like, I've always been very skeptical of this reboot I've followed this because of my friends following this,
I
know a lot about what's going on and how it was filmed, and so I have very mixed feelings about this reboot.
Well, tell us about them, John.
All right, so first thing is that, of course, this is an all-female cast, and I know a lot of people initially were kind of bummed out that they were doing this. I don't think that's a problem whatsoever. I have no problem with that. The problem I have with the all-female cast is that I'm just not a big fan of the cast itself. Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, I'm just not huge fans of their style of comedy.
Yeah,
I don't know if you like those people or not.
I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care specifically about the people. If the movie's good, awesome. Because there's been a few people that get cast in something that I want to watch. Like when I heard Ben Affleck was cast as Batman in Batman v Superman. At first, I was like, "What? Why? Why would you do that ever?" But
Daredevil.
But after you see the teasers come out, he looks awesome. So I'm super excited about that. We saw the same thing with Heath Ledger. He's in Brokeback Mountain. And everyone's like, you're going to put him as the Joker? And he was awesome.
He was also very messed up at that time in his life.
He was also very messed up, yes. And now he's dead. So,
there's a lot of people complaining about the Ectomobile. I don't know if you saw the scene with the Ectomobile in there, but there's a lot of complaints that it's a hearse. And a lot of people are complaining that the light on the top is just looks weird. So a lot of people are complaining about the Ectomobile, and I can totally see that. I don't like the hearse. And instead of it being like a station wagon, and I don't know. There's a lot of things that they've updated and changed that I'm not a big fan of. I'm still very skeptical about this movie. I think there's some parts that are very, very cool about it. Kate McKinnon. I think she's going to be the best thing about this film. I really do. She looks so much like Egon in the cartoon. I don't know if you saw the cartoon for Ghostbusters like back in the 80s and 90s that they had.
No, I feel like you're going to
hate
me.
You've never seen it. Oh, my gosh.
I've never really been into Ghostbusters or anything.
So Kate McKinnon in this Ghostbusters reboot looks almost identical to Egon in the cartoon.
which was a great cartoon when you were a kid.
Yeah,
but I think it's going to be the best thing about this movie is Kate McKinnon. I'm not so sure about the uniforms and some of the other stuff, but
when's this coming out?
July 15th. This is the funny thing. I watched this trailer. Actually, gives away too much, I think, and I think that's part of the problem.
Most trailers are starting to do that.
Yeah, because I saw a fan recut of this, and I was like, okay, this looks awesome. They used the original Ghostbusters music, and I think that made a huge difference. The music that they use in the trailer and the way they cut this trailer and some of the stuff they show in the trailer, it's just...
Too much.
It's too much. It's a little over the top. And I know Ghostbusters was kind of like that, but I think there's a lot of nostalgia to Ghostbusters, and I worry that... In some cases, they go a little bit too far.
Too far as in?
A little bit over the top with the comedy. And, you know, I mean, look, Melissa McCarthy is it's a little bit too slapstick.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be just a tone of more seriousness is what I think is lacking from what I saw in the trailer.
Who knows? Because that is something that I do remember. Super serious storyline in the movie.
Yeah.
That we don't know about. And the trailers are just to make people laugh and come watch it.
I think the fan recut, which is also on YouTube, I'll have to post that with the show notes. But I really like the fan recut. It makes it look so much better than it really is, especially with the original music. I don't think they need to change the music whatsoever. I think that music is so iconic that they don't need to change it.
Yeah, I think they should have. It'd be like releasing a Star Wars trailer with some weird new music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can re-record it and update that part so that it has higher fidelity since it was recorded so long ago. But I don't think they needed to really change it as much as they did.
Right.
So Microsoft is bringing Minecraft to the Oculus Rift. I know that you and Front Page Tech have a whole gaming channel now called Spectrum Swapper. That's big into Minecraft. So Microsoft has already showed off the game running on HoloLens. And now the company is announcing that it'll also work with Oculus Rift. And it seems like it's interesting the way that they do this. They have two modes. You can play in survival mode as well as playing in a multiplayer server. And once you start playing, you're presented with two different view modes. The first puts you in a virtual castle with the game running on what amounts to be a TV screen in front of you. And the second one is just a full immersive experience. Whereas the first one, you're just basically looking at a TV screen.
Which is dumb, but the second one
you don't like the meta of being into, you know, wearing a virtual device to watch a virtual game, game inside of a game.
That sounds terrible. Like why would I want to do that? But being in the game sounds awesome and also like really confusing because it doesn't look like our world. It's everything's square blocks. And that's just not what we're used to seeing. So when we get thrown into this entire environment that is so far from what we're used to and we're immersed in it, then that might be a bit too much. But I would still love to try it. I mean, I'm not even a huge Minecraft player, but this would totally be worth trying.
Really?
I think so. I mean, I don't play many games, and the games I have played, I've never been like, wow, I'd really like to just be thrown in there. That looks great. But Minecraft would be cool. I think that'd be awesome to just stand in it. Maybe I won't know how to move because it'll be too confusing, but it'll still be cool to look around inside Minecraft.
How do I do this virtual reality thing? I don't know how to be virtual.
How do you virtual reality?
I think it'll be interesting to see how this actually does because I still feel that virtual reality is somewhat of a niche market. Yes, HoloLens is coming out. Oculus Rift, I believe, is shipping soon. I don't remember all the details with that, but
HoloLens looks awesome. Like, have you seen the demos of that?
HoloLens is cool.
There's a demo that they showed of Minecraft on the HoloLens, and it literally looks like the future.
Wow.
Some dude just sat down and Minecraft was just in his living room on his table. It was nuts.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's you're talking more like an augmented reality type of thing.
Yeah, with the HoloLens. Yeah.
Yeah.
the augmented reality stuff, I think, is super cool.
Yeah,
the virtual reality stuff, like you're seeing with the Oculus Rift, I'm just not sold on. I think it's just a little bit novel for me.
We shall see. I still need to try it. The only thing I've tried was like it was really, really early on, and it wasn't good. So I'm curious to see something like the HTC Vive, where it's like that's, you know, touted to be this amazing experience. But you know, it's just something I have to try first. I think it sounds cool, though.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a while for this virtual reality stuff to really hit its peak and its stride. It's kind of like, you know, early gaming consoles. You had like the Atari and the Commodore 64. You know, that's the way I see virtual reality, where, yes, it's interesting, but it's, you know, that experience isn't as good as people would want it to be. And that's right. The way I feel about virtual reality is that, yes, you guys can do this virtual reality stuff, and it's leaps and bounds ahead of what it was years ago, but I still feel like there's so much more for it to improve in order for it to be something that people like myself, who isn't into gaming and isn't big into virtual reality, is actually interested in this stuff.
I think it all has to, like, it depends on what your expectations are. Like, if you're expecting some amazing experience and you try it and then it disappoints you, then it'll turn you away. So I think it all just depends on what your expectations are for any of these devices.
Well, isn't the Vive like $799?
Yeah.
Which I think is a huge entry to barrier.
Oh, yeah. That it's a huge price. But if you actually, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the Vive stuff, but like the technology behind the Vive, I can kind of get behind that price. I don't want to pay it, but I can understand it. But the Oculus Rift has been, I don't even want to quote the exact price, but like I think that's shipping, like they'll ship that with a computer that's capable of using it, and it's just a bunch of, it's too much. It's confusing.
And yeah, I think, but that's what I'm saying, with it being kind of a niche novel market in the sense of that. But if you look at something on the other hand, where you have like this Google Cardboard stuff, where at most you're paying $20 for this Google Cardboard thing. And I think a lot of people have really gotten on board with that. And that's where I'm coming from. Say that again.
$20 is not much. That's cool to just, you know, just pay for it just to try it.
Right. Right. And that's where we're at is that people don't want to invest a lot of money into this stuff that isn't proven. People don't know enough about this virtual reality stuff. The mass market, the mass consumer, most people don't know enough about these virtual reality devices and augmented reality devices to spend more than, you know, $50 on a device like this. Because that, you know, $50 and under, it's like throwaway money. Yes, we'll try it. And if it's good, that's awesome. It's like when tablets came out and the Kindle Fire was, you know, like $79. You could get a Kindle Fire tablet for $79. And if it breaks, it breaks. So what? You're only out $79.
Yeah, I would really like to try it. Even like a Google Cardboard, I can spend $20 on, and just like get inside of a YouTube video sounds cool to me. Just to try it
inside a YouTube video.
Well, you know YouTube supports 360 video now. So
yeah, so you're talking like 360 videos.
Yeah, I don't mean just inside of Tech News Weekly, but.
that would be why would anybody want to do that?
But inside of a 360 degree video would be cool. You guys need to start streaming in 360 degrees.
I'd love to do that. Are you kidding me? everybody can see how crappy the rest of my setup is. No, that would be really cool if we did like a live event or something where there's like an audience. Like that would be super cool. Like if you did a live Front Page Tech or something like that.
Yeah, everyone go buy Google Cardboard.
That episode you did from Jordan's house with everybody. That would have been cool in 360.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah, that would have been super cool.
So, John, are you privacy conscious? Do you care about your privacy? Is that something that you worry about?
No, I understand why people make a big deal about it, but I think a lot of people go a little too far. I don't really care. I think I trust things too much is probably my issue. But my life is all online, so it's just whatever. Whatever.
So you're not really worried at all about AT&T starting to have targeted ads to its TV customers. Later this year, AT&T is bringing internet-style targeted advertising to TV. What they're going to do is that they're partnering up with a video advertising company called Videology to sell ads based specifically on what the two companies think you're looking for. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. And one of the guys in the article, Mike Welch, the VP of AdWorks, says that, take this for example. He said that if an automaker was trying to target women who are luxury car owners whose leases are about to expire, his company would match that criteria with all of the subscribers that meet the established demographic. And from there, the automaker would have those ads delivered exclusively to those demographics. So if you're a woman that has a luxury car and you fall into that demographic, they could target that ad specifically only to those households.
Right. This is,
Basically what you see on the internet now. Whenever you browse whenever you browse something, you're being tracked. You got all these cookies that are trying to, for example, and I know you know this, whenever you go and browse crap on Amazon, you'll start seeing ads for the crap that you browsed.
Yeah. Of course, you can always make the argument, you know, if I have to see ads, I'd rather see ads that I might be interested in. But something that was actually pretty interesting, about a year ago or a year and a half ago, I went to an Intel conference, and there they showcased a lot of brand new startups because Intel had found these startups and they were funding them. And they had this big press conference, and there was a lot of companies there, startups there. And I went to a booth, and I recorded. I mean, I have no idea where the footage is, of course, but there was a group of guys that had made a camera that will be in a TV, like they hope to ship with TVs, that can pinpoint not only your face and your gender, but your expression on your face as you watch certain things. And based off of that, they would sell that information to advertisers. And it would kind of work like this, where you would be targeted. So, like, they would know if you're female, they would know if you're male, they would know what shows you're watching, when you're watching, they would know if you have kids, they would know your facial expressions during certain ads. They would be able to target you to a crazy level. And it was like this technology that they were working on, and they had me stand in front, and they had the camera on me, and it, like, on screen, I could see my face, and it shot a bunch of lines on my face, and it could literally determine every reaction I had. It was crazy. And to think that, like, one day that camera could ship on TVs and help give that information to advertisers is crazy. That's too much to me.
How's this for my facial expression? I wonder if it can read this.
You look like you don't want it.
No. Why would anybody want a camera in their living room that record, you know, all your expressions and whether you're male or female? Do you know what other stuff goes on in my living room besides just my TV watching? Do I want a camera that watches everything that I'm doing and scans everything that I'm doing in my living room?
No, probably not. It's for the advertisers, John.
I don't even keep my camera in front of me when I'm not using it. Well, I don't want a camera looking at me all day long.
I always have my camera plugged in, pointing right at me. So,
so I should hack into your computer and just watch you all day.
No, you can just watch me.
That would be interesting.
Or you just see my cat walking around all day.
Oh, gosh. No, it's that Minority Report style type of thing. You know, you have all these things that scan you, and I don't know. I'm worried that it'll end up going to that demo that you're talking about. That's what I'm worried about. Yes, I mean, targeted ads are here. They're going to stay. I'm not a fan of them.
I mean, technically, the targeted ads are more valuable for everyone, right? I mean, we don't like ads, but ads have to be there to sustain the programming that you watch.
Yeah.
And if you're going to see them, it might as well be targeted. It's more valuable for the brand because they're not wasting money. When they pay the money, they know it's going to the right people. And it's more valuable to you because you're not seeing stuff that you really don't want to see.
I think there has to be a way for people to opt out on that sort of thing, though.
Yeah.
I think that's what it comes to, especially if it's a camera in your freaking living room.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'm not going to buy a TV that has a built-in camera that watches me. Not a chance. So let's go on to our last story here. There's a new rumor for the iPhone 7 Plus. This is in addition to the 7 Plus with dual cameras that they've been talking about for a while now. According to some questionable information shared to the Chinese website MyDrivers by KGI Securities, the iPhone 7 Plus might come in two models, one with a single lens and one with a dual lens, which we've heard rumors of for a while now. With the dual lens iPhone 7 Plus being referred to as the iPhone Pro. What do you think about this rumor?
Man, throughout, I've been doing like this tech news stuff for years, and Apple has been one of the most predictable companies that there is. So I'm always able to judge these rumors and be like, yeah, that sounds like something Apple would do, or no, that's not going to happen. But Apple has been doing some weird stuff the past year, year and a half, like some really weird stuff that like doesn't necessarily make sense. And it's either there's one of two things that are happening. Either Apple has a plan for the future that they're not telling everyone about, and they don't want to like jump to a major change so quickly. So they're easing people in, and these weird midline devices are there for a reason. Or they literally just have so much money that they're just going to cover any market they can with like a weird 4-inch iPhone, when we've been basically forcing people to get bigger phones for years now. And even Apple was like, when everyone was like, no, I don't want a bigger phone, they're like, no, 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 you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Here's a bigger phone. And everyone used the bigger phone. But now they're like, oh, you got small hands. Here's a tiny phone. So we'll probably be seeing the iPhone SE this month. You have the iPad Pro, which was kind of a weird move, but I feel like that's more towards like shaping a future plan that they have. The midline MacBook that isn't like a midline price, just the MacBook that's super pretty. But also, if you really think about it, is just a weird placement of that piece of hardware. They're making weird choices. And I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the iPhone 7 Plus was not called the iPhone 7 Plus and it was called the iPhone Pro because of whatever reason Apple comes up with, because it's unapologetically bigger, or the dual camera system, cool. So it wouldn't surprise me if they named it the iPhone Pro. I guess it also wouldn't surprise me if there was a dual camera system, because, I mean, for years and years and years, the best camera that you can get on a smartphone has been on an iPhone. I mean, now we have companies really catching up, but there was no competition before. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter the megapixel count. iPhones always had a better sensor in them, and now the past year, you see like Samsung cameras really catching up. LG has done some crazy things. So now it wouldn't surprise me if they were just trying to step it up a little bit and they had some dual camera system on whatever they're calling the iPhone Pro.
I think it's interesting. And well, I'm just thinking about this because I agree with you to a degree in the fact that they've made a lot of weird stuff lately, a lot of weird choices. And I know I'm one of these guys that always goes and thinks back about what would Steve Jobs do? And I know they're not a company that can do that anymore. Tim Cook is not Steve Jobs. I know that. But at the same time, I feel like in some cases they stray a little bit too far. If they do, in fact, are having two models of the iPhone 7 Plus, I think that ends up being more fragmentation. And I hope this is just a complete rumor. I hope this isn't true, because I think that would be absolutely ridiculous and it doesn't make sense.
That would be four iPhones in one year. If we had the iPhone 7, the iPhone 7 Plus, the iPhone Pro, and the iPhone SE, that's too much.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying.
We know that Steve Jobs wouldn't let this happen. I mean, Steve Jobs would, he'd just be like, everyone's going to use a bigger phone. That's it. One iPhone, people are just going to learn how to use it. But when we talk about Tim Cook, we still have to give him credit, because Apple has never made more money ever in history. Like, they are the most profitable company right now. They've never made this much money. So Tim Cook obviously is leading them in a direction that makes Apple one of the most powerful companies in the world. But they're still making some weird choices here, and I don't have an explanation for them. And I've been doing this for a while, and it's still very confusing to me. So,
but it doesn't make sense to me. If you look at the history of the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus and the 6S, if you look at the fact that when you look at the 6 and the 6S compared to the 6 Plus and the 6S Plus, the 6S and the 6 Plus, the pluses always would have, you know, a couple of extra features compared to just the base model that they had with the 6 and 6S. For example, you on the latest ones, you have optical image stabilization for video, which you don't have on just the 6S. And that's a distinction that I think is fine. It's if they have the 7 and the 7 Plus, where the 7 Plus has a dual camera system, but the 7 does not. It has a single lens system. I think that makes way more sense than having, you know, an iPhone 7 with a single lens camera, an iPhone 7 Plus with a single lens, but then an iPhone Pro, a third version that has a dual lens. I think that's one too many.
The selling point for the iPhone 7 Plus should not be just it's bigger, so buy it. I think adding those extra features are necessary. That's cool. That's another reason to buy that phone instead of so now we have the iPhone 7. The iPhone 7 Plus gives you a couple more features and it's bigger. Totally fine. Totally acceptable. But for them to add another phone to add one or two more features, pro, quote-unquote, pro-level features, is nuts.
Yeah, Curtis B. in the chat room says that it could be multiple pro knives that they are going to narrow down after internal testing. And that could be what's going on here. Because I think just, like you said, four phones is just way too many. And Steve Jobs would never let that happen. And I think that's... Because this is something we complained about with Android in the past, is Android fragmentation, having all these devices that Android has that some are crappy, some are okay, some are great, but then you also have all these different versions of Android on all of these phones.
Right. And
now
are
I think we're starting to see the same with iPhone.
This is just one company.
Yeah.
Making four phones? What?
Don't think you need it. I think if they do any more than three, that's ridiculous. They don't need to do more
than
three.
Even pushing it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hope that they have a bigger plan and they know what they're doing, because I sure don't know what they're doing. I have no idea.
Well, they got enough money, they can do whatever the heck they want.
Yeah.
They literally have FU money.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's pretty much it. Thanks for being on with me today.
Oh, not a problem, man. Not a problem.
So where can people find more about you and what you're doing?
You can follow me at John_Prosser on Twitter. I do a show called Front Page Tech. FrontPageTech.net is the website, and you can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/FrontPageTech.
And you've got your 400th episode coming up that you're going to film this weekend.
Yep, my cat won't stop bugging me. Bad cat, go away, please. Let me talk on the interwebs. We're recording... We just did episode 399, which is like crazy. We're recording the 400th this week. And in fact, I'm going location scouting tonight with Lucas and Brian. And we're going to get the location nailed down and record during the weekend and somehow have it up by Monday.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm excited to see that episode, because I remember the 300th episode and that was just awesome.
Yeah, we kind of go all out. It's it's a
but
lot
you
of
should,
work.
But you know?
Yeah, we only got to do it once a year, so.
It's well, guys, follow me on Twitter at Suncast. And also, you know, if you need any help editing your podcast, I started at Fiverr. You can go and find me on Fiverr for help with your podcast. I'll edit it. I'll make it sound great. You know me. I do all this stuff on GFQ. Fiverr.suncast.com. Also, follow me on Twitter at Suncast. That's Suncast with a K. And make sure that you subscribe and follow us everywhere that you would like to. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. We have RSS feeds. And be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube as well. And thanks for watching.